Hello and welcome to the Vorthos cast. I'm Jayanelli.
And I'm Jayanelli.
That is not true, Chris. Tell them who you really are.
I'm Chris Delano, but there's just the two of us on today, so if you get us mixed up, I'm so sorry.
It's going to sound like I've been monologuing the whole night.
Not unusual for you, really.
Not unfair, but hey, anyway.
Anyways, what are we talking about tonight, Jay? Because I think there's a hint that it's the two of us on here because the other hosts of the podcast don't really have thoughts about what we're talking about tonight.
It is Fallout. So we're going to talk about the flavor gems of the new Fallout set. Because Chris and I are Fallout fans. One of us more than the other. Yeah. But, you know, that's okay. Any amount of Fallout fan is a good Fallout fan.
Yeah, I can say that I have played Fallout 3, 4, and New Vegas. But I've played New Vegas a lot more than the other two. So I know a good bit about those three games. I have never touched Fallout 1 and 2 or Fallout 76 or Fallout Tactics, which is apparently also a game I didn't even know existed.
There's like two Fallout Tactics games, too, if I recall. Those were like already having problems with canon, though, like they contradicted the Fallout 1 and 2. So, yeah. Anyway, so before we begin, let's just mention that Outlaws of Thunder Junction story starts next week. Is that next week from the Monday this airs, or next week as in they start like today?
Monday, the next week as of the day of release of this episode, which is the 18th, is I believe the first day of story. I don't know if we know how much story there's going to be. It just says story begins March 18th and the debut is the 26th. So I'm guessing somewhere between 1 to 8 days of story, maybe more, maybe less. Who knows?
I know exactly how much story there's going to be, or I did at one point and have forgotten. So
well,
anyway,
you said that before. And then it turned out that something you thought was going to be two stories was just one story. So sometimes you don't even know.
That's true. Decisions get made without me. Yeah. Shocking, I know.
The long Miguel story for Lost Caverns of Ixalan. I think you mentioned you thought it was going to be two, but they just put it all in one really long, really great story. So,
yeah, I think he trimmed it back a little. He trimmed some of the fat from it, too, to make it flow. All right, so let's talk about Fallout. So there are a few background things you should know about Fallout before we begin. Fallout is a, and God, this is a mouthful. It is a retro, futuristic, semi-satirical sci-fi game.
post-apocalyptic. Don't forget post-apocalyptic.
It's post-apocalyptic. So what has happened in the Fallout universe is that in our future, not too far away now, a few decades in the future, World War III happens. And during World War III, the bombs get dropped over every major city in the world, basically. The whole world is more or less wiped out. And the story is about the survivors of all of that and what happens afterwards. And you usually play what's called a vault dweller, someone who is a descendant of someone who bought into one of these very fancy looking Fallout shelters called a vault. But the problem is Vault Tech was not a good organization by any means. They're actually kind of evil, and the vaults weren't really about saving humanity. And they were much more of a sick social experiment where the player character usually comes from one of the control vaults for their social experiments. So things are already pretty bad. There is a lot of radiation in the wasteland that has caused a lot of mutations. But there is also, you know, mutating forced evolutionary viruses that mutate people into, giant super mutants like the Incredible Hulk, but also animals into all sorts of wild things that you'll see in the wasteland. So with that kind of grounding out of the way, The first Fallout game. Here we go. Okay. The first Fallout game takes place about 100 years after the bombs fall. Maybe more like 80. I don't recall exactly. And it follows a vault dweller who is forced to leave their vault because the water chip breaks and they need a replacement. So you have to go to another vault and find one. And when you start exploring, you realize, oh, people have actually survived out in the wasteland. But also, oh my God, like everything here wants to kill me. So it doesn't really go great for you. Basically, I'm not going to do a long explanation here because we don't have time for me to go through like the whole plot of every Fallout game. But a character called the Master, who just accidentally discovered this pre-war forced evolutionary virus or FEV experiments, gets mutated pretty badly and decides that their solution in creating world peace is through the Unity, which is turning everyone into a Hulk-like super mutant under his control, which is, you know, not the best plan, probably.
I mean, it works out. If it works, it works great. You know, I mean,
yeah,
if you're in control of an army of super mutants, I mean, like, come on, that's awesome.
So that his plan is depicted in the in Guardian Project in the reprint for this set. Some other things to note about this. Ian the Reckless is one of the first companions you get in the first game. Is he known for accidentally shooting you? This is in the thing. I completely forgot about that.
That's like something I learned about the character, because like I said, I haven't played Fallout 1 and 2, but apparently Ian is pretty well known for accidentally shooting you when like spraying down a bunch of enemies. So that's why his ability also damages you.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So I played the original Fallout, but a while ago. I played the original Fallout all the way through. I played Fallout 2, but my game always crashed in, I think it's New Reno, whatever the sort of gambling city is. My game would always crash during the plot in there, so I never fully finished Fallout 2, but I know what the plot is to it. There are other characters. So there's a recurring dog named Dogmeat that appears in most of the Fallout games. It is not the same dog, it's just the name given to your dog companion. The card Dogmeat is actually the Fallout 4 version, because of the bandana and because of the background with the Red Rocket Truck Stop, I think is the name of it. But Dogmeat is in a lot of the games.
Yeah, you can find him pretty early on in Fallout 4. I want to say he's not as easy to find in Fallout 3, and he's not in New Vegas at all, but we'll talk about that. But he's like the first companion you get in Fallout 4.
So Vault 13, Dweller's Journey. Vault 13 is the original Vault Dweller that is their vault. And so this is sort of their story. And what is sad about their story is if the path to exile in the set shows the Vault Dweller sort of walking away sadly. And that's the last scene, because after you do all this and save the wasteland and save your vault, you get back to the vault and the vault's overseer is like, I'm sorry, you've changed too much. You're going to encourage everyone else here to leave the vault. You can't come back in. And that's sort of where the game ends. It's a very iconic ending because it was not a happy ending to the game. And I think a lot of people like that, because at that time it was usually, oh, you saved the day. It's like, oh, you saved the day. And now you have to leave. A few other notes. So Aradesh, the founder, is the mayor of a town called Shady Springs, which is really important, especially if you're going to watch the new Fallout TV series from Amazon. Shady Springs is a very important location because it becomes the central hub of what eventually becomes the new California Republic in Fallout 2, and they're a major player in Fallout 2 and in Fallout New Vegas. And they will also, I've already seen the flag. Someone pointed out the flag to me in the trailer. They will also be in the Fallout TV show.
Yeah, I'm excited for the Fallout TV show. We were talking about it a little bit before we started, but it looks like it's going to be like really well made and like really,
it looks really good. Yeah.
Really like trying to capture the feeling of playing a Fallout game, because like one of the lead, like one of the big hooks about Fallout is that it is a very immersive role-playing game. The world is very, you know, it's a Bethesda game at its heart in a lot of ways, and that there's a lot to it. There's a ton of lore. Every time you go and open up a computer terminal, you can read a really like funny story, things like that. It's like the books in, you know, Skyrim or an Elder Scrolls game. There's just a lot of depth to the world. But it's also like kind of funny in a lot of ways. Like there's a lot of things about it's Fallout.
Darkly just, humorous. Like, yeah.
Very, very darkly humorous. Very funny things happen.
So it's a lot of the pre-war corporations were all both evil and incompetent, one or the other, usually both. And a lot of what you discover in ruins and stuff has to do with that. There's a lot of sort of dark humor, lampooning, you know, American corporations, the American government, things like that. Something else I should note. So you were talking about how it's a Bethesda game. It is now, but the original Fallout games were developed by a company called Black Isle Studios and published through, I believe it's Interplay. And then Fallout Tactics was also published by Interplay. But then Black Isle Studios and Interplay went under and Bethesda bought up the rights. And so then they created Fallout 3 using their Elder Scrolls engine. And then Fallout New Vegas was developed by Obsidian Entertainment, which was a company founded by many of the key creative folks behind the original Fallout. So Fallout New Vegas is, well, it's not Fallout 3. It is the sort of spiritual Fallout 3, because they even used a lot of the original content that they had planned for their version of Fallout 3 in Fallout New Vegas. There was the code name for the original Fallout 3 was Van Buren, and there's a lot of similarities between Van Buren and New Vegas, which I thought was pretty cool. So let's move on to Fallout. Oh, well, real quick, Vault 12. I do want to talk about the sagas. Vault 12, the Necropolis, is a vault that's door never sealed, if I remember correctly. And basically, Vault Tech and the Enclave, which we'll talk about in a second, wanted to study radiation. And so it's full of ghouls, which are people who have been mutated into a zombie-like state by radiation. Ghouls are ageless. They're like functionally immortal. But there's also the drawback that many of them, the radiation kind of scrambles their brains and they become feral. And so that's where you get feral ghouls from. Mariposa Military Base is where the Master was mutating his super mutant army. And those are all the Fallout 1 stuff I wanted to mention. So Fallout 2 takes place about 80 years later. You take you are the chosen one who is a direct descendant of the Vault Dweller from Fallout 1 that got kicked out, and you have you are part of a tribe that they founded out in the wilderness. You take on the mantle of the ancients, which I love because it is literally just the Vault Dweller, the original Vault Dweller suit. So you take that and go out on a quest to get a Gek, or a Garden of Eden creation kit, which is sort of like the Genesis device from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. It just instantly terraforms a landscape into being beautiful and yes, perfect for surviving.
Our audience will definitely know a lot about Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
You don't know.
No, I know a lot of our audience will know what that is, but I feel like the same people will also know what the Gek is. I feel like the overlap there is pretty...
You mean the olds? Is that what you mean, yes. Chris?
Yes. I mean, I'm amongst them. But I think so. Just to bring back to the cards a little bit with the Gek, there is no card for the Gek in the set that I saw. I don't even think there was any cards directly referencing it.
One of the Vault Boy cards has the Gek on it. It's one of the cartoony cards, but that's it.
But there is... Abundant Growth kind of shows what looks like the after effects of a Gek, where like it's just suddenly like a little paradise in the middle of the wasteland. So that was my I think like a sort of subtle nod to what the Gek could be.
I believe it is, because I want to zoom in here. They've got Vault 8. No, it is Vault 13. So it is likely the the result of the GEC is actually this abundant growth, because it has the Vault Dweller with Vault 13. It's just very hard to make out the number on the back. You're in the midst of the worst drought ever, and you need to go recover a GEC. And so you go back to Vault 13, and it's empty, except for, you know, Death Claws, which are these, like, the ultimate apex predator in this new wasteland environment. And you encounter the Enclave, which is sort of made up of, like, the corrupt elements of the U.S. government, who set themselves up in bunkers that are actually meant to survive. And then their descendants believe that they're the true rulers of the what used to be the United States, and are, you know, horribly fascist and full of, you know, wanting to do lots of eugenics because their blood is pure, unlike all those irradiated freaks out in the wilderness. And the one you defeat the current president of the United States on an offshore oil rig, which the lack of subtext there is amazing. You know, just the beating the president on an oil rig. Amazing. And you also have to defeat Agent Frank Horrigan, who is basically a Secret Service agent, I think, who has to be he's like one of the only characters in the entire franchise. One of the only boss battles that can't be beaten by a speech check, someone told me recently. And Dragon Skull Summit, I should note, from the set, is that offshore oil rig where the Enclave is located. So the Enclave are like eternal antagonists in Fallout because they keep showing up. Also, I want to note that the president of the United States in the Fallout universe during Fallout 2, his name is Dick Richardson, which is just let that one sit with you for a while. His name is Richard Richardson.
It's a very American name.
Oh, boy.
Richard Richardson.
So that sort of brings us to Fallout 3 and 4 and New Vegas. But one thing I want to mention is there's a faction I haven't talked about, which is the Brotherhood of Steel, which is made up of like former army veterans who learned what the U.S. government was really up to and formed their own group. And they believe they're the only people who are responsible enough for high levels of technology in the world. And so they seek out high-tech things to either destroy or incorporate into their own technology, essentially. And they are sort of a semi-religious military order. Like, they literally call themselves paladins and elders and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, the fun thing about the Brotherhood of Steel is that they are, like, you want them to be good because they're really cool looking with like the power armor and like the what are they called? Hellebirds, or I think.
Yeah.
Like they're like flying ships and like all that. But they are often like the bad guys in a story in Fallout because, you know, they're all like former military, somewhat fanatics and can be really scary. So you want them to be good, but sometimes they are just not. But speaking of that,
they're usually at best a neutral entity. However, I will note the power armor that you brought up is one of the most iconic things from the setting. T-45 power armor is usually the one that people see, but there are a bunch of different ones, and the Brotherhood of Steel has a lot of it, which is where a lot of their power comes from, is because they have the like highest tech soldiers out there.
Yeah, they're no match for my New California Republic, of which I am a big fan of. But that's a Fallout New Vegas conversation we can have. But we do have to get through Fallout 3 and 4 before we can really talk about New Vegas. Fallout 3, I played it a long time ago. It's a while, but essentially the core of the story of Fallout 3 is that you are from Vault 101. You are in the like Washington, D.C. capital region of the world. And your dad is kind of like a weird guy in the vault. He's the like doctor, but he's always a little off. The beginning of the game has you being essentially like you're like a baby and then you're like a young kid. And like you kind of like grow up over the course of the tutorial, which is a really fun way to show a tutorial.
It's very cool. It was very iconic. Vault 101 birthday party, the saga, references that. as does the Path of Ancestry in the set.
Yeah. So your dad one day just kind of like leaves the vault, which is, you know, not good because he's the vault's physician and like the smartest person in the whole vault. And so things kind of go to hell as soon as he's gone. The whole place starts falling apart and you go searching for him to figure out what happened and where your dad went. That dad, by the way, has a card in the set, which is really cool. James Wandering Dad. That is literally, yeah, the player character's dad. Turns out his whole thing is that he is doing this thing called Project Purity, which is a, I believe, is he working with the Enclave or is he working independently? He's working independently.
He's working independently. The Enclave. So he is creating, he has created Project Purity, which is intended. The name is, it should set off alarm bells in anyone's head. It is intended to purify the water of the Capital Wasteland. However, the Enclave, led by Colonel Autumn, who also has a card in the set, want to use it to eliminate all or make everyone who has been affected by radiation or mutations of any kind. It wants to use it to basically poison the drinking water so that the Capital Wasteland will be left for all the pure, unmutated folks. And the thing about the Fallout world is basically anyone who has existed outside for any period of time has been mutated in some way, even slightly. So it's pretty genocidal of a plan.
But it is like a good thing your dad's trying to do. And so you try and follow him to figure out what's going on. I'm not going to go into the whole quest line of finding your dad.
No, turns out, we don't need to do that.
Yeah. It's a really funny, you can actually find him really fast when playing Fallout 3. Like you can just go straight to where he is, or you go on like a really roundabout quest. But that's like one of the iconic things about the Fallout games made by Bethesda is that they're completely open world. So like you can just like go straight to the end of the game typically. But anyways, the Project Purity, there's also a card in the set called Struggle for Project Purity. Fun fact, there are two cards in the set that are like takes on the siege cycle from Khans of Tarkir, specifically Fate Reforged, where you pick one side or the other. And in this case, you're picking between the Enclave and the Brotherhood of Steel, because Brotherhood of Steel doesn't want the Enclave to have that technology. And so you have to pick which side of the fight you're on, which is a really fun way to do a siege cycle for Fallout games.
This is also one of the only Fallout games where the Brotherhood of Steel are like not the antagonists or neutral. Like they're actually kind of good guys. I should note that roundabout quest leads you from to meet Three Dog, who is the DJ playing on your radio, all those smooth beats playing as you explore the wasteland. And Dr. Madison Lee, who's a face card, used to work with your father. And so if you find her in a place called Rivet City, she'll tell you where to go. But also she ends up working with the Brotherhood of Steel to finish one of my favorite things in any Fallout game, which is Liberty Prime, which also has a card.
So both Madison Lee and Liberty Prime show up in Fallout 3 and Fallout 4. So they are characters in both of those games, which I thought was
Is really Liberty Prime in 4? Did I not remember that?
Yeah.
It's all the sleep because I finished it right before we had Arjun. So I have a lot of sleep deprivation issues. With that.
Fallout 4 does feature Liberty Prime, I think, pretty big member part of the game, if I remember correctly. But it's been a while since I played Fallout 4. But I do believe like part of the main quest takes you by Liberty Prime, or like Liberty Prime is involved in that. But anyways, the main quest of Fallout 4 involves you, funny sort of inverse on Fallout 3. You're not like a child searching for his dad. You're a dad searching for his child. And you are, instead of being in like the Capital Wasteland, you are like just right outside around like Boston and Philadelphia. So like, well, not directly in those areas, but, you know, like in that sort of Boston area, which I thought was a real interesting way to like invert Fallout 3 for Fallout 4, is you are a dad or a mom. You can also play as the mom searching for the child who is kidnapped because you are in a vault that has been frozen. Does this vault have a card in the set? I don't remember.
It doesn't, but you can see it in the background of Kellogg Dangerous mm-hmm. Mind. Because what happens is you, your spouse, and your child are all from pre-war times. You go into the vault, and it's a vault that cryogenically freezes people. You get woken up when Kellogg breaks into the vault and steals your child and kills your spouse, which, again, was right before I didn't know this was the plot. This was right before I had a child. So I was very emotionally attached to Fallout 4. And you spend the game searching for them, like Chris just said.
Yeah. And this is you get heavily involved with the Enclave in this game, I believe, because turns out your child also has a card in the set. And that's Sean, Father of Synths.
It's the Institute. Yeah.
Yeah. The Institute.
Not the Enclave in this one. The Institute is basically the remnants of MIT have created like a very high tech underground bunker and have been building. They don't want to leave it, but they have been building synths to leave for them. And they're basically like almost Terminators, except they keep having like pesky free will. And the Institute's trying to figure out how to keep them in check and doing what they want to do and infiltrating like the places on the surface, so none of them are a threat to the Institute. And there's an organization called the Railroad that is trying to free them all. And that's where Desdemona Freedom's Edge comes in. And then you have the Brotherhood of Steel, which is about 10. It's the one from Fallout 3, but about 10 years later. So it's actually kind of cool. Elder Arthur Maxson was a little boy in Fallout, was a boy in Fallout 3 and is now like the leader of the Brotherhood in this game. And there's a couple other instances of that too. There's a young boy who has a card in Fallout 3 called MacReady Lamplight Mare, and he is an adult and a recruitable companion in Fallout 4 as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like fun little things. My favorite thing in Fallout 4 is Nick Valentine, Private Eye.
He's the best. He's probably the best companion in all of Fallout.
I call him everyone's synth boyfriend in our notes here because like he's like a romanceable companion in a way. He's really fun. Everyone loves Nick Valentine. There's a lot of really good companions in Fallout 3 and 4. A lot of them have cards. I'm not going to go into all of them. But there's a lot. There's also, so we skipped over this. There's a couple of interesting things I liked about the card set. Fallout is a game all about making choices, and this is going to come up a lot in New Vegas. But in Fallout 3, there's a couple of big things that happen in the game. Early on, you find a place called Megaton, where it's like a little village built up around what you hope is an totally inert nuclear bomb that has fallen and is just sort of sitting there giving off radiation. Turns out, it is not totally inert. That nuclear bomb will explode or can explode if you so choose. And so part of one of the early quests in the game is you choosing whether or not that if you're going to like blow up Megaton, because some guy offers to like give you a bunch of money to blow it up because he doesn't like seeing it out his window.
of course, about that part.
Yeah. People in Megaton worship this bomb. There's like some ghouls,
some of them,
et cetera.
Do. Some of them,
yeah,
do,
yeah, some of them do. So like blowing it up means killing all the people in the city. Not blowing it up means some guy doesn't have a nice view out his window. So it's like an early moral choice, but there's like only one answer. You should not blow up Megaton. That's like a really, like, it just doesn't make sense why you would do it. But it's cool that I got a card called Megaton's Fate, which allows you to either disarm the bomb, which is a thing you can do in the game. You can just make it so it never blows up, or detonate the bomb, which destroys everything. There's also the ending of Fallout 3 is pretty famous.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, I want to note Moira Brown, one of the legends in the set, is from Megaton, and she has you like sends you lots and lots of like small quests to build a wasteland survival guide. That's the whole concept of her card. But if you blow up Megaton, you don't lose that quest because she gets mutated into a ghoul. And so she's still there and still working on it, even though you just blew her up.
Yeah. Also, like I was going to say, the ending of Fallout 3 is pretty iconic. because you get to like make some pretty big choices at the end and like decide the fate of the future. And I really love it because those are like shown in the card Anguished Unmaking, which gives you the option of at the end, you kind of have to do a thing and someone has to die. Someone has to be sacrificed. I'm not going to go into details. And you get to choose who dies. You can die. One of your companions can die, or your dad can die. And that's the real sad ending. And so Anguished Unmaking shows you choosing your father to go into the space, get irradiated and die.
So I thought that was, I think that actually happens earlier. He floods it with radiation to keep it and kills, I think Colonel Autumn is in there with him. And he floods it with radiation. And so later, in order to finally activate it, you have to go into the radiation chamber and have it kill you. And like it hardens the game there. And then they came out with a DLC because everyone was like, we have companions who are immune to radiation. Why can't I send in the ghoul or the super mutant to pull the lever and then no one dies? And they're like, Okay.
I was going to say the big thing about the ending is that there are like a lot of options where it doesn't make sense for you to go in and die and no one has to die. So it's kind of like a weird thing that anyone has to die in this case, period. But yeah, it's a really sad moment. And I liked that it got a card. But those are my thoughts on Fallout 3. Oh, also Diamond City is a land card from Fallout 4. It's built in Fenway Park. It's called Diamond City because it's, you know, the diamond, the baseball diamond.
I want to call out a couple things I love from this set. First of all, Tunnel Snakes rule. Butch Deloria is like a 1950s greaser style gang member in your vault in Fallout 3 who later become, he's sort of like your bully growing up. But he later becomes a recruitable companion. The Gary clones are from one of the most iconic vaults from a place called Vault 108, where they just repeatedly cloned the same guy to observe the results. And they became very aggressive to non-clones and essentially non-verbal. All they say is their name, like a Pokemon. Gary, Gary, Gary. So, yeah, it's great. I love that one a lot. Harold and Bob, first Newmans. So Harold is a character that was in Fallout 1, 2, and 3. He gets mutated by the forced evolutionary virus, just like the Master, and starts growing like a tree growth. And then by Fallout 3, he's turned into a full-fledged tree and has like a nature cult around him, and he absolutely hates it.
I think he like begs you to kill him, if I remember.
Yeah. You can potentially do that.
Now, I want to talk about Fallout New Vegas because this is the game that I know the most about and I love the most.
Let me do two more.
All right.
Two maybe more. Maybe three. Okay.
Three.
So Paladin Dance Steel Maverick is a synth. He is one of the best companions from Fallout 4 other than Nick in that he has a very complicated story because he is basically a synth infiltrator. Sent into the Brotherhood of Steel, and he believes in the Brotherhood of Steel's mission, but then also finds out he's a synth, and you have a lot of really complicated kind of choices there, like, oh, all of a sudden, you know, you might have been siding with the Brotherhood of Steel or thought maybe they had a point, and then they're like, this guy who has served them loyally forever, they just want to, you know, kill him right away. And then the other thing I wanted to mention just was the Silver Shroud costume and Skull Clamp are references to like these comic booky style characters that appear in both Fallout 3 and 4. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about New Vegas.
New Vegas. Okay, so the inciting incident of New Vegas, it's very different from the other Fallout games because you don't play a Vault Dweller or even anyone associated with a vault. You play a courier who has been hired for a job to transport something. You don't know anything about it when you're hired. You just are sent on a little trip to go bring something to a man named Mr. House in New Vegas. And the inciting incident of the game is depicted in the card Lethal Scheme, which is a reprint, actually, which shows the opening of the game where you just get shot and put in a grave. game starts out with you getting shot by this guy named Benny. And you start off the game trying to figure out what happened and hunt down Benny and figure out why he shot you, and also get back what he stole from you, which turns out to be the platinum chip. The platinum chip is needed by Mr. House for a reason I'll get into later. But you go on this really cool adventure across what is New Vegas. It is, you know, the area around what is, you know, currently Las Vegas, but, you know, it's been bombed, so it's just mostly ruins. One of the first things you encounter pretty early on is the Nipton Lottery, which has a card in the set. You come across a town where this guy is running away from it, shouting about how he won the lottery. Turns out the lottery he won is the most important lottery you'll ever win in your whole life, because he was the one person in the town who was not killed. Everyone else in town was killed by Caesar's Legion. Caesar's Legion is one of the like three major factions in the set, or in the game. Excuse me, not a set, it's a game. There's Caesar's Legion, which is led by Caesar, Legion's Emperor, who is one of the face cards of the Commander decks. And they are sort of like modeled around the idea of the Roman legions. Because what it really is Caesar has just kind of gotten a bunch of like horrible, awful people and given them a little bit of discipline. And now they follow his words and go around terrorizing everyone in the wasteland, kidnapping people, killing people, slaving people. That's right. They are slavers in the game, which my personal rule about any game setting where there are people who are slavers is I kill them on sight without question, because I think that is just the only, I'm not going to play in a gray area with that. So I always start off antagonistic against Caesar's Legion. They're pretty evil. But they kill all of Nipton and leave the one guy alone who runs away. You then continue on a little while and you end up encountering one of the other major factions, which is the New California Republic, which you talked a little bit about with Fallout 2, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The New California Republic is essentially, I mean, like, they're not perfect. Right, like
they're a government, yes, but they are the least bad government in the wasteland.
Yeah, so they're essentially like doing what they can to help protect the wasteland in a lot of ways. Most of the time you meet someone from the NCR, they are just trying to do their best to like kill raiders and stop Caesar's Legion, but they have a pretty good hand on the New Vegas area, with their biggest, you know, Their biggest problem being Caesar's Legion. There is the Brotherhood of Steel in this setting. They are not a major player in the story of New Vegas. They are there. You run into them. There are some quest lines, but they're not what you would like. They're not a big part of it. But anyways, the third big faction really is just the one guy, Mr. House, because it turns out Mr. House is a sort of in charge of the New Vegas Strip, and he kind of makes himself out to be like a computer AI, which is not like an unheard of thing. But you find out that he is just a really old guy who has been on life support for like 200 years and hooked up to a computer and is in charge of the Vegas Strip, which is like a little bastion of civilization, quote unquote, in the wasteland. Which is all, you know, built around gambling, and he protects the entire strip with his army of Securitrons. So there's a couple of cards that depict Securitrons in the decks. One of them is really scary. It's the Securitron Patrol, I believe, which has squad, which means you can just make a bunch of Securitrons, which is what, you know, Mr. House does. The thing about Securitrons is that they are not as good as like the NCR or the Brotherhood of Steel or Caesar's Legion in fighting a war. They're very good at like doing security, but Mr. House wants that platinum chip that you were carrying because it will upgrade all the Securitrons and make them into essentially a like fighting force to hold New Vegas under Mr. House's rule. So that's like the essential like plot of New Vegas. Your goal is to get to New Vegas, get to Mr. House, catch Benny, who ends up being captured by Caesar's Legion. And then you have to take a side in the fight. You have to decide if you're going to side with the New California Republic, Caesar's Legion, or Mr. House, because Hoover Dam is a major power supply source in the wasteland. Turns out people still want electricity in a post-apocalyptic future. And so the New California Republic currently hold control of Caesar's Dam, or excuse me, of Hoover Dam. Caesar's Legion want to take it. And Mr. House also wants power over it because, you know, he runs the Vegas Strip and they need power. So Battle of Hoover Dam is a card in the set. It's the other take on a siege cycle, which I think was really cool because once again, you have to pick a side between Caesar's Legion and the New California Republic and decide who's going to win the fight for Hoover Dam. There's a lot of really fun choices you make in New Vegas to like support whichever side you're supporting. You can end up with like an army of Securitrons at the Battle for Hoover Dam. You can end up with Brotherhood of Steel there if you go certain routes. It's a really fun like way to end the game. But there's a lot more to New Vegas.
There's so much more.
There's so much. It's a huge game.
It's probably one of the least linear of the Bethesda era Fallout games. In terms of like the narrative, like not always deliberately directing you to the next big thing. It felt like there was a lot of other things to find.
Yeah, there's a lot of exploration, a lot of fun like vaults you can just sort of find yourself in. There's a lot of like little places you show up and you're just like, oh, this has a whole story and background. One of my favorite ones is Jason Bright and the he gets a card in the set, Jason Bright, Glowing Prophet. You find him at the Repcon facility, which is sort of like a rocket building facility. And it turns out he is a glowing one, which is a type of ghoul who is so irradiated that they literally glow with all of the radiation. And he is leading a bunch of other ghouls. And this one poor human who is not a ghoul, who thinks he's a ghoul, very funny, but also kind of dark storyline. To rebuild some space rockets, because Jason Bright is going to take all of his ghouls into space. And so you go into the Repcon facility and there's a little quest line where you help them basically repair some rockets and do some other things involving some Nightkin, which we did not even talk about, but are like super mutants made by the Master, who are like incredibly deadly and wear stealth boys so you can't even see them. They are very scary, but you help them build the rockets and get into space. So it's like a very early quest line that you can run into. There's also Helios 1, which is a land card. It's just a normal power plant. No big deal. Nothing going
just,
on
there. Just a lot of it's a like a solar farm, right?
Yeah, it's a solar farm.
It's you know, renewable energy.
Yeah, it turns out that it is actually a command center for a like orbital space laser. and you get to choose if you want to use it as an orbital space laser or if you want to actually make it into a power plant to, you know, provide power to the people in the wasteland. Very fun quest line there, too. There's a bunch of vaults you run into. One of the most famous ones, one of the more confusing ones, if you don't know what it's talking about, is Vault 21. It is has a saga in the set. It is the original Las Vegas vault that had like a whole casino as part of it because it's Las Vegas, you know. And when Mr. House takes over New Vegas, he empties out the vault. He gets everyone out of the vault and then he fills up all of the residential areas with cement so that no one can live in the vault. And then he turns it into a casino for his own profit because Mr. House is a good guy.
He's a sort of a Howard Hughes type, which tells you a lot about what you need to know. Vault 11 is one of my favorites where the sick social experiment was they upon entering the vault, they were told that they needed to sacrifice someone every year or they would all be killed. But the dark twist is that actually, if they refused to sacrifice anyone, no one would have been killed, and a message would have played saying congratulations on defeating the death. Instead, their population dwindled over like 100 and something years until there were just like 5 people left, And they would have elections for the overseer, who is the person who would be sacrificed next. So you would literally be campaigning for other people so that no one would vote for you.
Yeah. And it's fun. The card in the set involves secretly voting. And if no one votes for anyone, each player gets to draw a card. But if you vote for someone, the creature with the most votes gets destroyed. So I think that's fun. There's a bunch of references to New Vegas in these decks because it was a very, very popular game. The White Glove Gourmands, there's a card for them. They're a bunch of cannibals who live in New Vegas. I don't need to go more into that. They are creepy. There's also there's no dog meat in New Vegas, but instead there's Rex Cyberhound, which is kind of a dog meat. He's the dog who is a cyber dog, which was a thing created before, you know, the bombs fell. And you have to find him a new brain because the brains of the cyber dog starts to, you know,
fall to be apart. Fair, he's had a good 200-year run as a good boy.
Very good boy.
If you don't want him to turn into Old Yeller, you need to find a new brain. One of my favorite little companion interactions is Craig Boone.
Oh, yeah. So the story of Craig Boone, I want to tell this one before we have to move on. One of the other first places you find when you are playing New Vegas is a place called Novak. There's nothing in the game that leads you to Novak. Like, there's no quest that, like, you get when you start the game that says go to Novak, but you run into it pretty early on if you're following the road. And the first thing you see is a giant dinosaur, that's like a roadside attraction, which is depicted in the card, Temple of Abandon. And when you get there, turns out Novak is like a little, you know, used to be a hotel, hence no vacancy, Novak. And a bunch of people are living there, and you meet Craig Boone, who used to be an NCR sniper and is now just working as a security guard for Novak because he ran off from the NCR with a woman he loved. And he, you know, settled down in Novak with her, and he was playing guard there. And then she was kidnapped by a bunch of Caesar's Legion. But he doesn't think that it was, you know, just a random kidnapping. He thinks someone told them where to find her and had her kidnapped and, you know, turned over to slavery and Caesar's Legion, because that's what they do, because they're horrible, awful people. So you do a quest line with him to try and figure out who in town was the one who sold away his wife, basically. Ends with you having to put a hat on while walking with whoever you think sold his wife into slavery in front of the dinosaur, and then Craig shoots them. So it's like a really fun, like, you have to do some investigation, question the town.
And I forgot about all of that. Yeah.
You end up finding out who did it, which I'm not going to spoil, but you can also just kind of pick someone if you want. Like, Craig doesn't know who did it. You have to figure out for him. But once you figure it out and he takes his shot and takes out the person who sold his wife, you get to take him as a companion, and he'll join with you and, like, follow you around. And he's a really good companion. He's got, like, a really good crack shot. You know, he's a sniper.
What just lives rent free. What makes this so iconic is that his sniper perch is Dinky, that dinosaur. Yeah. Dinky the dinosaur. It's just a giant. It's like you're wandering the wasteland. The reason you go to Novak in the first place is because you see a big dinosaur statue in the distance and, like, I need to go see what that is. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of things like that in New Vegas where you just kind of see it off in the distance and then go check it out. Helios One and Repcon Facility are both places that the quest does not send you there, but you see them on your way and you think, like, I can't not go to the place with a giant rocket ship. Or I can't not go to this giant tower surrounded by solar panels. Gotta go check them out.
So there's one other companion I want to talk about who I feel is, like, a really strong, like, representation of what Fallout is. And that's Lily Bowen, Raging Grandma. she is a Nightkin, which Chris talked about earlier. She is actually one of the original super mutants created by the Master way back in Fallout 1. And she was a grandmother then, and the stealth boys that the Nightkin use, that give them their weird extra mutations, also gives them, like, mental issues. And so she is like torn between, I think it's essentially like a schizophrenia that has set in, or her memories of like, you can cure the deterioration in her brain, but she would lose the memories of her grandchildren, which I just think it's just like, it's on the face of it, it is very funny. But if you stop and like pursue her quest at all, it's just so tragic. Like that is 100% the Fallout experience.
Yeah. There's Fallout New Vegas is such a good game. I like constantly have a save for Fallout New Vegas that I'm playing on like either my Xbox or my computer. There's just a lot you can do. But yeah, that's like the gist of Fallout New Vegas. We talked about that for a really long time.
Yeah, we're already at 50 minutes. Yeah. So let's say we don't really know anything about Fallout 76. I haven't played it. Chris, you haven't played it, right?
No, I haven't played it. I really want to, but I also...
I love the Mothman, though. Yeah. I love the idea of that, especially because it's Appalachia. I also just love a second Fallout game that takes place within, like, walking distance of my house. Because I'm right between the Capital Wasteland and Appalachia. So, but let's talk about some of the common Fallout stuff. Do you want to tell people what VATS is?
Yeah, so VATS is Vault-Tec Assisted Targeting System. So this is it in Fallout 1 and 2 at all? I haven't played
it. It is. So yeah. In that, it is like you have your regular to hit, and then you can essentially, VATS comes up, and you can pick to shoot like a limb or a head or something, and you have the same like percentage chance kind of thing.
Yeah, so it is essentially the way that you like aim at things. Instead of it just being like a first person shooter, which it is, most of the Fallout games are, the first two are like isometric role playing games, but 3, 4, 76 and New Vegas are all first person shooters. You get to like pause the game and like choose which part of the body you're going to shoot. And there's like strategic parts to that, but that's what VATS is. That's why it's a removal spell in the set, because you are just sort of picking what you're going to shoot on a creature or on an enemy. It's kind of iconic. It was one of the first things they showed from the set because it is sort of like one of the iconic Fallout
things
about Fallout.
It's also, I should note, it and the special frames are also from your Pip-Boy. Your Pip-Boy, yeah. Which is this giant arm-mounted cell phone PDA device. And so those are all flavorings of what that does. It's basically your pause screen, your radio, everything, every like thing, gameplay thing that needs a diegetic explanation, you do through the Pip-Boy.
Yeah. It's kind of also the explanation for why you are the like protagonist, because like not everyone has a Pip-Boy. It's actually like very uncommon. So it's like the way that like you're special because you have a Pip-Boy. There's also the mysterious stranger who is very much associated with VATS. The mysterious stranger has showed up in every Fallout game. It is a perk. So throughout the game, as you level up, you pick perks for your character. And like the perks can be all sorts of different things. New Vegas has some really fun ones where like you can be a lady killer or a confirmed bachelor, which give you bonus damage to people of to either women or men. Hence the, it's anyways, it's funny.
We got it. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. But you pick perks and one of them is the mysterious stranger. And what that is that once you take it, there is a chance every time you use VATS that like a mysterious stranger is going to show up and help you and then disappear. So it's just like a really fun, like wacky thing that happens in the game.
And it's just a guy who shows up. He has an awesome gun. He shoots someone for you. Like basically he's like a critical success. And then he's gone. You don't stick around.
I also really love the card's inventory management, over encumbered and strong back, as sort of like telling a little story about inventory management is like a big part of a lot of video games. But in Fallout, it's kind of like its own mini game of like figuring what you can and can't carry, because everything has a weight and you have a certain amount that you can carry or else you become over encumbered, which is when you like literally at a certain point you cannot move anymore, which is really annoying. But in the
I just want to carry every plate ever that I discover. Okay, Chris.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you want to pick up everything you find, but you will just no longer be able to carry it all. But there is a perk that you can take called Strong Back, And what strong back does is make it so that you can't really get over encumbered. I think it like doubles the amount that you can carry or something. It creates such a amount that it doesn't matter anymore. You can just carry everything you find. And so having cards that do that in the set was very funny to me.
So the death claws I mentioned earlier are incredibly scary. They are like high level enemies for you to fight in the game. Whenever you encounter one early in the game, you just run. Just run. It's not.
Yeah.
You're going to die.
Yeah.
You're going to die. They're.
It's kind of terrifying. Both Fallout 1. I think it's Fallout. No, Fallout 1 doesn't have the death claws. It has super mutants you can run into. Fallout New Vegas is famous for. There is a very straight line you can take from the start of Fallout New Vegas to New Vegas. Like you can go to the end location of the game basically immediately if you want to. But you have to pass through an area where there's just a bunch of death claws. And like death claws are not easy to kill, even when you've been playing the game for like 100 hours and have a bunch of gear and you're like leveled up and everything. They are scary no matter what. So like
they are in all the Fallout games too. Yeah. Like, and they're even in the early games, they're it's basically unkillable. Like you really need to be kitted out correctly for it. Yeah.
They're like mutated lizards of some kind, and they just have like giant horns and claws and will just kill you. And they're impossible to kill, basically.
So let's hit the last couple things we want to talk about. The special bobbleheads are items you can get in game that permanently increases one of your stats. Special is the acronym for strength, perception, endurance, charisma, intelligence, agility, and luck, which are all your attributes that you can put points in through the game, and it affects all your different stats in the game, depending on that. And they all of these feature Vault Boy, who is the mascot of Vault Tech and sort of the cartoony face and mascot of Fallout itself.
Yeah. I also want to mention the card Fraying Sanity as a reprint. The art and flavor text are referencing a Penny Arcade comic. So like the webcomic Penny Arcade. They did a comic for, I think it was when Fallout 4 was coming out, which was about a vault where a guy was put in there with just a bunch of puppets and then goes kind of insane. And then once he gets out of the vault, he brings the puppets with him and is like a deadly force in the wasteland. it's a really funny comic, but I like that it got a reference in the set too, because it's not an official part of any game, but it is... an official piece of media that Fallout created.
They did declare it like canon. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Penny Arc. Yeah. It's very interesting. It's funny. Do you want to talk about the talismans?
Yeah. So all of the talismans, there's, the cycle of the talismans in the set. I think all of the enemy colored talismans, or is it like all of them? It's all of the talismans are in the commander decks.
They're all the magazines. Yeah.
They're all the magazines. So one of the things in Fallout is like, instead of having like a potion to like boost a skill, you find a magazine that'll boost the skill for a little while. So like, like a Science Today or like, Guns Today or something. They're all like little magazines. And once you find them, you can use them to like get 10 points in a stat temporarily. So it's kind of a fun homage to that part of the game.
I think that's about it. So there's a lot to talk. Like we could have gone on for longer, and I definitely could have gone on for longer. But there's just so much flavor packed into this set. I'm very excited to get my hands on them. I pre-ordered a while ago. I ordered like all four decks so that I think I'm gonna get some of my friends who are into Magic and Fallout, and we're all just gonna sit down and play it. I have not, other than like the flavor, like the card names and stuff and the art, I haven't looked closely at this set, and I kind of want to keep it that way and just play each of us take one of these decks and kind of play it blind.
I watched Loading Ready Run play them, and they looked really fun. I'm really excited. I really want to play with the decks, but I want to play with them like in a contained little 4-person pod. I think that's the best way to do it.
Oh, I forgot to mention, I mentioned this everywhere else I talked about Fallout. So Fallout itself is actually a spiritual successor to a game called Wasteland. And there is a card, I think it's Bastion of Remembrance in this set, that references that, because the Desert Rangers, I think is what they're called, are an organization from Wasteland. And so it's sort of like the NCR and the Desert Rangers are finally meeting up. What's funny about Wasteland is after Fallout became successful on Bethesda's side, there was actually a Kickstarter to make a new Wasteland game that is sort of an isometric tactical shooter RPG with a lot of the same vibes as Fallout. It doesn't get as wacky as Fallout, but it's in a very similar tone. And there are actually two, there's Wasteland 2 and Wasteland 3 now that you can go and get if you want to kind of, if you want a more of that kind of experience. Anywho, let's move on to final thoughts. What do you think, Chris?
My final thought is that I'm going to play some New Vegas tonight because I've got a save that I'm currently working through. I'm in like a vault where there's a bunch of ghouls and like glowing ones, and it's feral ghouls, and it's really, it's a scary vault. But like, one of the fun things about New Vegas is that it can be a really difficult game. There's a lot of parts that you like run into that are just hard, but it never feels like bad, you know, like. In some games, you reach a point where like, wow, this really sucks. I'm just kind of getting killed over and over again. With New Vegas, one of the things about it that is like really rewarding is that even when you're getting killed over and over again, you are still like, you feel like you're progressing because you're like learning a different way to like tackle the problem. So I've been like trying all sorts of different ways to get through this vault, and it's really fun. So I'm gonna do that tonight, I think.
My final thought is I wish I had time to tackle New Vegas and Fallout 4 and all of them again, because you reminding me that I didn't even remember that Liberty Prime was in Fallout 4. So now I'm like, oh, Liberty Prime, I should note as well, is I like it very ironically because it is just the most jingoistic robot you have ever met, spouting off phrases like death is a preferable alternative to communism. Because it's just like built by like this very jingoistic pre-war society, and they weren't really able to wipe that personality when they were rebuilding it. So you're just kind of stuck with it. But it's very funny. So with that, if you think we're very funny, this is the worst segue ever. Make sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/theforthoscast. It pays for things like us being able to do events, to be able to go to an event like MC Chicago, a MagicCon Chicago a couple weeks ago. So if you want to see us at events, like that's expensive. So we love having Patreons and listeners like you participate in one of, I think, the best communities in Magic. Like, I so love interacting in our Discord server. I think everyone who is there is there for the right reasons. I love having discussions here because we can disagree on things and no one gets like mad, or no one just goes off. I mean, occasionally we'll go off on a rant, but we'll be respectful to each other. And like, I just can't have that kind of conversation almost anywhere else on the internet. Like, so it's just a great place to be. And with that, thank you all for listening. This has been the Vorthos Cast.